Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Planetary Makeover. We're thrilled to have back a guest that we've had a couple times before, and we hope to have back in the future, Betsy Whitfield. She's a lifelong student of the Ageless Wisdom teaching, as well as having a degree in philosophy. But that's not all. She's a writer, a gardener, a wife, a mother, and telling the reappearance story is one of her true loves. That's the reappearance of the world teacher Maitreya and his group, the Masters of Wisdom, humanity's elder brothers. And around this topic, and on the AWT, or the Ageless Wisdom teaching, Betsy's been a lecturer, an interviewer, and an interviewee. And in addition to that, she has her own blog. And she's so learned in the topic that we're covering tonight, the initiations, that I'm going to let her speak for herself for the most part. So welcome, Betsy.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
And it's great to have you back to educate us again because you're much more learned in this subject than I am. So I'm going to let you have the spotlight. And I'll come back and ask a few questions at the end.
Okay. I could tell you what I know about the five initiations in about 15 minutes, but we have an hour to spend, so I thought I would bring in quite a bit of material that is going to give a little more nuanced explanation than I could give. So I'm speaking only as a student of the Ageless Wisdom teachings. And most recently, the material of Benjamin Krem and Alice Bailey. The wisdom that we're talking about is available to any true seeker. You can find the Lucis Trust material online, and you can find the Benjamin Krem books at shareinternational.us. They're readily available. So the five initiations. The first is the birth, the second, the baptism, the third, the transfiguration, the fourth, the crucifixion slash renunciation, the fifth and sixth, the resurrection, and the ascension. I'm going to read what Benjamin Krem has said about this. He repeats, or I repeat, re was repeating what he said. The birth at Bethlehem symbolizes the first initiation. The baptism at Jordan stands for the second. The transfiguration on the Mount is the symbol for the third, and the crucifixion represents the fourth. The fifth initiation, the resurrection, and the name given to the initiation which makes a man a master, and the ascension is the initiation which takes the resurrected master into still higher stages. The Christ, that is Maitreya, has lived for thousands of years in a resurrected body and has been an ascended master for 2,000 years. So I'm going to be quoting from the book From Bethlehem to Calvary, because it is a Bailey book, because it refers specifically to the stages that the Master Jesus went through. And those stages are, of course, published in the Christian Bible. And so for many people, that's something that they can relate to. But first, a short introduction to this great process, which we call life. Every one of us is on a path toward increased awareness, knowledge, and experience. And I think anyone who has lived a bit knows that there's a lot of that going around. So we call that growth. It is one of us, every one of us is a conscious being, having come from the highest source. And we're on our way back to that source. So it's a question of evolution, spiritual evolution. The physical body, we're told, has evolved pretty well, and I think there are only a few tweaks left in our physical evolution that will make us more sensitive to the higher worlds. The etheric world in particular, I think, is already being sensitized in many, many people. So we are more than just physical beings, as I say. In the book, A Master Speaks, Benjamin Krem's master talks of the growth of consciousness. Quote, as we enter the new age, a new urgency is being felt to explore the outer and subjective worlds and to understand the relation between these two aspects of creation. Many scientists around the world are bending their inquiries in that direction, prompted by the need to demonstrate and prove their intuitive belief that all is interconnected. The acceptance of a superpersonal self or soul is gradually gaining ground and is leading us to a new synthesis in men's view of reality. Eventually, the common ground of all such investigations will exist in the awareness that consciousness is the attribute of the soul, that mind and brain are conduits, vehicles for its manifestation, and that there is no break or separation in the connecting links between them. So the growth of consciousness is the path of initiation. And the laws by which we learn and grow and which enable us to initiate, to continue our process through multiple lifetimes, as most people realize now, the law of rebirth or reincarnation, and the law of cause and effect or karma, which I think of as behavior modification. So initiation is the word that expresses complex events and inner and outer lives of those who have reached a certain wisdom, and has particular meaning for those today who are pledged disciples of the wisdom. As we know, discipleship is a self-initiated condition, meaning discipline. People have a vision. They have a need, a call to do something better, that there must be more to life than just this. And that drives people. It always has and always will. Drives people into the most amazing experiences, some difficult, but many quite blissful, I think. So we have individual initiation. Initiation is always self-initiated through fiery aspiration, personal discipline, and altruistic world service to humanity. Here are primary remarks from the Master DK through Alice Bailey, written in Discipleship in the New Age 2. I think this is really worthwhile to read to you because this is a discussion for the disciples during World War II. And I am just blown away by the fact that these conditions that are talked about are still with us today. And so this material, I think, is very relevant. There is a vital need for the majority of aspirants and disciples to assume a different attitude toward the opportunity to prepare for initiation, and of which they are all faced. The more advanced among them are conscious of impending possibilities. The significance of the proffered training has made its just appeal. Others are so interested in the tests, difficulties incidental to the clarification of the vision prior to the processes of initiation that they have neither the time nor the strength to do more than just live through the time of trial and at the same time to serve as best they can. Both the vision and their service suffer from their failure to develop that divine indifference, which is the hallmark of the true initiate. Added to all this is the world situation with its inevitable, all-enveloping psychic atmosphere, its attendant strains and its constant wearing anxiety, plus the hold which war sufferers have on all hearts and sympathies. Most aspirants and disciples believe that they are bearing enough and are tried to the limit of their capacity. This is not the case. The deeper sources of strength in them have not yet been evoked, and the tension under which they should act and live from day to day is only as yet a feeble one. It is not all exacting. Ponder on this last phrase. The objective demands being made upon all disciples and therefore upon all of you are not simply to enable you to live through the present period as successfully, emotionally, mentally, and spiritually as possible. It goes far deeper than that, or should. Apart from the demands upon your spiritual resources, incident to the particular initiation for which it is desired that you take, there is also the demand upon all disciples to participate in the effort of humanity as a whole to take the first initiation with all the physical relinquishments and the agony that ever precedes the birth of the Christ in the heart of the individual. Only this time it is the hearts of all humanity. Preparatory to this first initiation, there has always to be individually and now collectively for the first time. That refers to group initiation, which we'll talk about down the road. The denial of the lower self and the fervid acceptance by the personality of the loss of all the material factors which have held the soul a prisoner in the womb of time. Hence, my brothers, the wide extent of the material destruction to be seen on every hand, and don't we still have that? The depths of physical poverty into which all men have been and are being plunged, and don't we have that? The detachment from the priority of things which is being enforced, and the necessity for rebuilding human life on sounder values than the physical. In all of this, disciples and initiates are today sharing, and when understanding is present and right orientation, the help which those can give to who have already undergone the first initiation is great. To this you are called, and upon your understanding response to the collective need will depend the rapidity with which you will be enabled to achieve the next expansion of consciousness or initiation, which may be for you as an individual possible. You have, therefore, to consider your individual response to the demands of your own soul and your collective response to the collective need. It is the initiate in you, the Christ in you, which is now called to the collective service, and the radiation today of the Christ Spirit, actively present in the hearts of all disciples, is the one thing which can salvage mankind, enable humanity to move forward on the path of discipleship, and thus evoke that new spirit which can and will build the new world. I find that very appropriate. So, again, going now to from Bethlehem to Calvary. Again, I'm sorry, I'll be reading a lot here, but there is such nuance in here that I think is useful. It is a living process, and through that process, all who duly discipline themselves and voluntarily acquiesce may pass scrutinized and aided by that band of initiates and knowers who are the guides of the race and who are known to us under many names in different parts of the world and in different ages. They are called in the West Christ and His Church, the Elder Brothers of Humanity. Initiation is therefore a reality and not a beautiful and rather easily attained vision, which a man undergoes when he joins certain organizations and which can be understood only by joining such groups. It has nothing to do with the societies, esoteric schools, and organizations. All that they can do is to teach the aspirant certain well-known and basic rules of the road, and then leave him to understand or not, as his earnestness and development permit, and to pass on through the portal as his equipment and destiny allow. The initiates of the world are found in every nation, in every church, in every group where men of goodwill are to be found working, and where world service is rendered. I find that very enlightening. It's so easy to think of certain groups as the groups where initiation is being processed. This is not the case. The best of them can only prepare men for that stage in the evolutionary process, which is called discipleship. The reason why this is sadly the case and why initiation seems so far away from the membership of most of the groups who claim an insight into the initiation process is that they have not laid the needed emphasis upon the mental illumination, which perforce lights the way to the gate leading to the secret place of the Most High. They have laid the emphasis on personality devotion to the masters and to their own organization leaders. They have stressed adherence to authoritative teaching and rules of life, and have not primarily emphasized adherence to the still small voice of the soul. The way to the place of initiation and to the center where Christ may be found is the way of the soul, the lonely way of self-unfoldment, of self-effacement, and of self-discipline. It is the way of mental illumination and intuitive perception. Only through the revelation of the Christ within each human being can this at-one-ment be made. Only through the new birth, the baptism of spirit and of fire, and the transfiguration of the nature can deliverance be found and unity with God experienced. So those are preliminary remarks, just pointing to the glamours that arise all the time, even in people and in groups who know better. It is very difficult to stay focused and to go through what apparently we must go through. The plan for humanity concerns man's conscious unfoldment as mankind grows in wisdom and knowledge, and as the civilizations come and go, each bringing its needed lesson and its high point of attainment. Men as a group approach the gate with which leads to life. All modern discovery, all psychological studies and knowledge, all group activity and all scientific achievement, as well as all real occult knowledge, are spiritual in nature. And these are aids to that expansion of consciousness which will make of mankind the great initiate. Just as soon as human beings can grasp in a large synthesis the necessity of entering more definitely into the world of true meaning and of value, we shall see the mysteries becoming universally recognized. The new values will be seen, and the new techniques and methods of living will be evolved as a result of this perception. There are signs this is already happening, that the destruction going on around us and the tearing down of the ancient institutions, political, religious, and social, are only preparatory to this undertaking. We're on our way to that which is within, and many voices are today proclaiming this. Aspiration is a basic requirement, both in the individual and in the race. Today, humanity aspires to great heights, and this aspiration is responsible for the great national movements seen in so many countries. At the same time, the individual disciples are striving anew toward illumination, incited thereto by their longing to meet world need. As we know, the disciple knows because he works. It's not the other way around. Self must be lost in the sight of service. Service is rapidly becoming the keynote of the time, and one of the incentives in racial endeavor. The meeting of disaster and the undergoing of painful experience is ever the lot of the individual disciple. It is becoming obvious that the world disciple, humanity itself, is now deemed worthy of such a testing. This universality of difficulty in every department of human life and excluding no group indicates that mankind as a whole is being prepared for initiation. There is purpose underlying what is happening today. The joy of physical life is being changed into the joy of understanding, and new values, new desires, and a new sense of love replace the old. The immortal soul in man prepares him for the first initiation, for it is this soul which manifests upon earth as the infant Christ and appears in man. And as an aside, you'll notice that the references here are pretty Christian, and that is because, of course, this is from Bethlehem to Calvary. That is the new birth. That which has been slowly gestating in man comes at last to birth, and the Christ or soul is born consciously. This is the first initiation. But in due time and season, the infant soul makes its appearance, and the first of the five initiations is made possible. Excuse me. The work proceeds, and the Christ life unfolds and develops in the man until the second and third initiations take place. At that time, as many believe, we are initiated through the instrumentality of the Christ. And in full waking consciousness, the initiate stands in his presence and sees him face to face. And as we know in Maitreya's messages, he talks about that exact process. In Maitreya's message number 20, he says, I shall take you to him when you are ready, when you have passed through the gates twice and stood shining before me. So in those Maitreya's messages, Maitreya covers a great deal of ground. And after, what, maybe 30 years of listening to them, I'm finally beginning to eke out some real gems that are in there. And this is so many times he refers to his relationship, his task of lifting the disciples and humanity out of the levels in which evil can approach them. And so, again, I recommend those messages highly. So the birth has occurred. Whenever a thing is perceived and felt, this is interesting. There is the experience of the soul. And whenever a thought and a feeling become indistinguishable, there is the soul. Soul means oneness, unity, union between inner wish and outer reality. As man moves toward acceptance of the universe, toward compatibility between what he feels as a wish from within and what he perceives as the arrangement without, and as both elements expand, the soul moves toward greatness. The first initiation has taken place. Christ has been born in Bethlehem. The soul has come into outer expression, and now this soul, representative of all a soul can be, the individual initiate moves on toward greatness. The mission of the Savior definitely starts at this time, but for the sake of those who will follow after, he must sound the note of purification and conform to the ritual requirements and the general trend of thought of his time. So even as we are going through this process, this inner process, we live in a certain culture at a certain time, and we must fit in and do our service within the limits of that culture. The initiate who has taken the first step must lay emphasis upon the purification of the lower nature, which it is essential should preface the second initiation. The baptism of John was the symbol of this purification. So we've had the first initiation, the Christ principle, the love aspect of God is born in the human heart. The soul makes its appearance for the first time. But it doesn't end there. The physical body, emotional body, and mental body comprise the form side of man and veil or hide the soul. They are in reality his mechanism of contact with the outer world, the equipment whereby his consciousness unfolds and awakens. In their totality, they constitute his response apparatus, as the psychologists call it. We know that man is a physical animal as well as an emotional, sentient being and a thinking entity. When these three parts of man's lower nature are functioning smoothly and together form a unit for the use of the inner man, an integrated personality or an efficient lower self is the result. It is interesting to bear in mind that through these three aspects, man is brought en rapport with the existing universe and therefore with God, immanent in nature. So this is one of the first realizations after initiation. The physical body enables us to touch the tangible, visible world. The emotional, feeling nature responds to the heart. Most people live in their heart nature and in the feeling body, and it is through the heart that we find our way to the heart of God. Only through love can love be revealed. When through right use and understanding, the mind is definitely directed and properly oriented, it is brought en rapport with the mind of God, the universal mind, the purpose, the plan, and the will of God. Through the illumined mind of man, the mind of deity stands revealed. Thus, man is seen as made in the image of God. At the second initiation, Christ stood before God, the initiator. With all these aspects purified and matured, his mechanism adjusted and ready for use, and thus enabled him to give proof of that purification and tension in attitude, which would enable him to carry through his mission to a satisfactory conclusion. This he had to prove and to God and man through the purification which the baptism could give, and through the subsequent temptations in the wilderness. This second initiation is very difficult, we're told, and takes perhaps a few lifetimes to accomplish. At the second initiation, the initiate has to demonstrate a good amount of control over the emotional body, which is the most highly developed body that there has been so far in the history of mankind. What happens is he or she becomes immersed in swamps and is pushed hither and yon by his own emotional body. It's highly agitated. And then events start happening, and he is forced to respond in ways in which he knows he must overcome this emotional storm he's going through. So that really is the sign of preparation for the second initiation. And as Benjamin Krem has often taught, the second initiation is the initiation in which we use the mental body to overcome the emotional body. So we hold attention at the ajna, we think about things rather than reacting. We have enough contact with our soul that we know that the soul does not get involved. It is detached and is the observer in our lives. And so we hang on to that and try to be detached while this swirling swamp around us finally subsides and we have demonstrated control. It's a very difficult thing, we're told. So Christ gave the greatest of all ideas, that God is love, and that love could manifest in human form, and thus manifested could constitute a possibility for all men. His life was the demonstration of perfection such as the world had never previously seen. And of course, we know that back in Palestine, Jesus was overshadowed by Maitreya, who was the Christ back then and is now, for the last 3 years of his life. And that was his ability to demonstrate these initiations. It must have been very inspiring, despite the pain and suffering he went through. So we come to the third initiation. Only when we have achieved expression of divinity in and through the lower personal nature shall we have attained to that of worth and value which can be permitted under the divine plan to be crucified. This is the forgotten truth, yet it is all part of the evolutionary process whereby God is revealed through humanity. And here we have the first allusion to the fourth initiation, which is the crucifixion. There is a lot of overlapping going on in the experiences of an initiate, as far as I have read. And so these are not clear-cut scenarios. They all kind of come and flow together, and they ebb together. And so you have plenty of time to maybe get your sea legs again before the next opportunity, is what they call it, hits. It's only the man who has understood something of the value of the transfiguration initiation and the nature of the perfection then revealed who can follow along with Christ to the vision which was accorded him as he came down from that high point of achievement, and can later share with him an understanding of the natural world service. Now, as you know, the transfiguration occurred on Mount Golgotha. It was when Jesus went up to the mount with a couple of disciples. They fell asleep, and he was transfigured. He came before the initiator of the third initiation, and the word came that he is a son of God, and hear ye him, which is a very important phrase for the next stage of the life, which Jesus expressed in the fourth initiation. So Jesus had reached a high point in his development. He was a fully integrated personality. His soul had infused that personality with divinity, and he was to be listened to by people. And so he came down from there and began to teach. So we have here in message number 21, Maitreya's messages. Maitreya says, through you, if you know me, love my work, answer my call, that work may be done. I need helpers. I seek to place before you the chance to grow in service, to lift yourselves upward into a new light, into a new responsibility. And when I call, I shall expect you. Many there are now who are doing this work for me, yet know me not, nor know that I am here. It has always been so, for many work better in the shade. But you, my friends, and talking to those who are aspirants to initiation, but you, my friends, have the opportunity for full conscious service. Seize it then and begin now. Take part in the great plan which is changing the world, which is drawing together all men and all nations, which is showing the way into the future and back to God. It's very interesting that in the tumult in which we live, there has been a tremendous attack on Christianity, both from within Christianity and from without. The importance of that, if you remember what Maitreya has just said, back to God. God has been removed from the culture in many, many places. And so our task is not to shy away from speaking about God, and in whatever way you want to speak about it, because this is what will save the planet. This stage connotes the complete spiritual freedom from which we must eventually reach. Spiritual freedom being listening to the soul, listening to your intuition, and rather than mimicking words that someone else has said or written. Now the time has come for human beings to leave off believing and pass on to true knowledge through the method of thought, reflection, experiment, experience, and revelation. The immediate problem for all those who are seeking this new knowledge and who desire to become conscious knowers instead of faithful believers is that they should achieve it in the world of every day. After each expansion of consciousness and each unfoldment of a deepened awareness, we return, as Christ did, to the planes of everyday life and there subject our knowledge to the test, discover its reality and truth, and find out also wherein lies for us our next point of expansion and what new knowledge must be acquired. So it never ends. You go from one to the next. And with as you go along, the inspiration becomes stronger and stronger. The energies become stronger and stronger. So it's not as bad as it sounds, but it's not easy. The task of the disciple is the understanding and use of his divinity, having contacted it, having gone through the first initiation, the second initiation, and then the transfiguration, the third initiation. So he's fully aware, apparently, of that inner divinity, and now he must use it, or she. The knowledge of God immanent, yet based on a belief in God transcendent, is our endeavor. And having received the word, "Hear ye him," on Golgotha, it is in the everyday world that the test of success is presented to the transfigured personality. And world service is his path. In the groups that I'm familiar with, nobody much listens to us. We don't get, we don't really do all that well. And I say to my group, it's easy. We have developed a way of handling failure, but the real trouble will come when Maitreya comes out and we have success. One of the outstanding characteristics of each initiation is the increased capacity and ability of the initiate to serve. Christ demonstrated an entirely new and unique way in which to speak and to meet the masses, as well as to teach privately and personally his chosen few. His power to heal still continued, but his work shifted into a new field of new values, and he spoke those words and enunciated those truths which have proved the foundation of the belief of those who have had the insight to penetrate the theological presentation of Christianity and there find reality. His service consisted primarily at the time in teaching and speaking, but such is the wisdom and the beauty of his presentation of truth. He couched divinity in forms which the average man could grasp. He bridged the old and the new and gave out the new truth and that special revelation which were needed at the time to unite the ancient wisdom and the more modern hope. The second phase of the test lay in his prevision as to his end. He knew he had to die, and he knew how he would die, and yet he went forward undeviatingly upon the course assigned to him, although prevision of disaster was his. I should say that we're told that death is not necessarily the result of the fourth initiation. So that's good to know. Not only had he to demonstrate the power to endure success, but he also had to demonstrate the power to face disaster. Balancing the two against each other and seeing in both of them simply opportunities for divine expression and fields for the demonstration of detachment. Detachment is so important in all of this. That outstanding characteristic of the man who has been born again, purified and transfigured. To these tests was added the one which he had before encountered in the desert, the test of utter loneliness, the power to endure success, the power to endure disaster, the power to stand utterly alone. This Christ had to show to the world, and this he did. He stood triumphant before the world at an intermediate stage on his way to the cross. The agony of loneliness in the Garden of Gethsemane was probably a far harder moment for him than the publicity on Mount Golgotha. But in these more subtle tests, the quality of God himself was revealed, and it is God's quality and meaning which save the world, the quality of his life which is love and wisdom and value and reality. It was all of this which Christ accomplished. He embodied the great idea, the idea that God is love and that love is the motivating power of the universe. Now, the third initiation having been taken, we come to the fourth, the crucifixion, which is the renunciation of all the lures of the material life, even life itself. Only the perfected threefold body, the soul-infused personality, can be sacrificed to the will of God. And as you know, on the cross, Jesus said, "It is not my will, but thy will be done." So that's instructive. Now, Benjamin Krem writes in the Reappearance book, "The crucifixion on the cross was the outer manifestation of the inner experience of the great renunciation or crucifixion initiation of the disciple Jesus. At the same time, it was the outer manifestation of the ascension initiation of the Christ, Maitreya. After the resurrection, he appeared once again to disciples in Galilee. Thomas was asked to put his hand in his side to see that he was solid and physical. He could appear and disappear at will. All of this was an illustration of a resurrected body, a body of light. The interesting thing about the shroud, from my point of view, is how the image was made. The Christ resurrected the body of the disciple Jesus. When the body was laid in the tomb, the Christ, Maitreya, entered on the third morning. His consciousness once again entered into the body of the disciple Jesus and brought it back to life, as he had done before with Lazarus, only this was not the resurrection. Lazarus was simply brought back to life. This happens, I don't say frequently, but it happened quite often since and before. But resurrection is a very special thing technically. It's a great occult happening. What the Christ did was not only to bring the body to life again, but also to resurrect it. He shook loose, if you like, by the downflow of tremendous spiritual energy into the now dead body of Jesus. The atomic particles of matter reconstituted these and brought into that body matter of some atomic vibrational rate, that is matter which is literally light. The effect on that body was one of intense radiation, and it was that radiation which produced what is called an ionization effect of the image on the shroud." I found that very interesting. As a side note, we know that at each initiation, there is a portion of the body's atomic structure that is replaced by subatomic particles. Literally, at each initiation, you become more a body of light. I find that very helpful to know. So there are two tests which I think I'm supposed to talk about several definitions. One of them is the burning ground, and then the clear cold light. So the burning ground is an experience, one of two tests which always prepare the individual or the group for initiation. In the burning ground, the aspirant's conscience creates a fiery aspiration. And again, the soul is doing this. You don't need to sit there and generate a conscience. The soul is coming out and forcing you to do these things. Fiery aspiration consumes the initiate, brings him or her to a point which separates the so-called dweller on the threshold from the angel of the presence. Now, we know the dweller on the threshold very well. It is that part of us that contains all the fears, all the self-flagellations, all the guilt, all the, are you kidding me? You can't do this feelings that we have. But our conscience has brought us to the point where we must face that and get past it. And we move to the angel of the presence. And this represents a crisis at which the desires and love of the personality are destroyed. You have burned the bridge. Then the initiate discovers what they call the clear, cold light, the light of the intuition, of pure reason, infallible, unremitting light that reveals the depths of evil, yet lures the initiate forward through a growing sense of divinity. Apparently, the dark night of the soul comes in then, as evil is revealed to the poor initiate, and all is dark. And yet, there is a sense of this divinity which pushes him on. This light reveals the omnipresence of God, God immanent and transcendent, the divinity within all forms, and secondly, the omniscience of God, thus ending the previous phase of one's isolated unity. So one becomes so broad, so understanding, seeing the light within all forms creates a forgiveness, a not even forgiveness, an acceptance, and is a most extraordinary experience. So we talk about the door of initiation. The door exists for the first two initiations. And throughout the discussion of the growth of consciousness, there is always the imitating of that which is above, or as Benjamin Krem says, acting as if you were better than you think you are. And the door of the first two initiations isn't really a door, but a vibrational field, which until the aspirant can raise his or her vibration to the level of that field, is a barrier to the new and greater consciousness that he or she seeks until the purification of glamour is effected. This is referring to the second initiation. So the symptoms of initiation are a wider awareness and more love for everything. Now, as we know, lately in this new age, we do not have initiation per se as individuals. That is something of the past. We're in the age of Aquarius, the age of the group. So we are now working toward group initiation. Now that the Shambhala force is reaching humanity directly, its energies can only be used in group formation. The book, The Rays and the Initiations, contains the 14 rules or requirements which must be lived within the group before initiation is possible, specifically Rule 11, which itself contains four essential requirements. Non-sentimental group relationships, working with the forces of destruction constructively, working as a mini-hierarchy, cultivating the potency of occult silence. I suggest reading and rereading Maitreya's Mission, Volume 2, Chapter 19, for an excerpt of Benjamin Krem's lecture on group initiation. And finally, we have a discussion, short because we're running out of time, meeting the externalization of hierarchy. Meeting the requirements for group initiation will create a group of disciples in incarnation who will, as a group, vibrate to the quality of the inner ashram. This is the real externalization. As Benjamin Krem has said, it is not only that the masters are coming out into our everyday lives to lead and guide and teach, but that they have disciples who, as with the door of initiation, have, through meditation and service and spiritual tension created by both of those, have developed a high vibratory rate and can mimic on the physical plane the inner ashram. That is the real externalization of the hierarchy. So that's what I have.
My goodness, Betsy. What a study. That was like a fast-tracked intensive class in the mystery of the initiations and the mystery schools and the ageless wisdom teaching in general. And it makes me wonder how many people recognize these steps. I was raised Catholic, but didn't know this angle on the gospel story till decades later.
Yeah.
I'm sure this some version of this must underlie all faiths and philosophies. But I just want to ask a couple of quick questions. We got 3 minutes left. So I have to be short questions and short answers. I was wondering, for the people that are listening, where on the web may listeners find a layman's explanation of the initiations?
Well, they're all through Benjamin Krem's book, Maitreya's Mission. The reappearance book is replete with, in a Q&A format, questions that people have about Jesus and his life and what happened when. So I would suggest the books by Benjamin Krem, Maitreya's Mission. The Bailey books are a little bit more fifth ray. They're more technical. But for a layman, I think Krem's books are marvelous at explaining this.
Great. Well, that'd be a great start. And a couple of them, I think three of them, are available as free downloads. I was just looking at my notes here, because there is a website where they can go to. I believe I've got it here. And that one was known as, I believe, share-ecart.com. And also, they can go to the website www.share-international.us. And let me see, we've got very little time left. I was going to say, another question might be from some newbies to the subject. How much study, Betsy, do you think it would take before people like us can get a reasonably good grasp of these teachings?
Well, since it's a process, it depends on the person who is starting. If you have hopefully some time to read instead of doing on the internet, I would read Benjamin Krem's book. The Rays and the Initiations, the Alice Bailey book, is fairly technical, but it's very nuanced and has, I've been reading it for years. I go to a page and I see that I've underlined and starred something. And I think, oh my goodness, I've got that.
Well, Betsy, we've got less than a minute. So I just like to tell people too, they can read the Alice Bailey books online at lucistrust.com, L-U-C-I-S trust.com. And I want to thank you again for being here. This is a vast topic, and I'm sure we'll need to talk about it again because my head is still reeling, just trying to take it all in. So thank you so much, Betsy, and we hope to have you back again soon.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Certainly. And thank you all for watching, tuning in, and we'll be back again. And so will Betsy, and so will this topic. And we hope you investigate some of those other sources as well. Thank you so much, and we'll see you soon. Bye for now.
Bye.